You are now listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast, where the worlds of sports medicine and performance collide. My name is Mike Quintons. I'm a physical therapist with an entrepreneurial mindset that specializes in treating orthopedic and sports injuries. I'm bringing on the brightest and sharpest in the field of sports medicine to share their best practices and explore the gap where medicine meets performance. Let's dive into this. Pain science and PRI. So, all right, let's dive into it. What is pain science?
So pain science is understanding all the factors that go into pain. People just assume that if pain only happens when there's tissue damage or a tissue is injured. And that's definitely not the case. There's a great way to look at it. It's as a cup of water, a potentially little injury, and that has some water in the cup. But people assume that the cup is overfilled by the water, by that one injury alone. But what ends up happening is that each little thing, whether you didn't sleep well, whether you had too much sugar in your body's like fighting that inflammation, some personal stress or psychological anything, those all add to it. And then in the end of the day, that has more to do with the pain experience than the actual injury itself. As you start to sensitize tissue, as you have like an area of your body that you believe something to be true about, like let's go to like a herniated disc, or let me give a fun example and then I'll kind of get back into it. The story, Lorimer Moseley wrote a book that's like kind of the gold standard for understanding pain. And basically there's a guy walking through like a safari and he gets scratched by a stick and he doesn't think anything of it. He does the same thing again and he gets scratched by the stick and keeps walking, and it happened to be a poisonous snake and he like almost died. The next time he got scratched by a stick, he freaked out. And that's what happens with people when they go to the doctor and their back is sore and the doctor tells them they have a major disc bulge and like all these benign words that are the same thing that's in 80% of the population that doesn't have pain, but now they have this big problem. And so their brain is grappling with this sensation that they've experienced before, but now it's a big thing that could lead to surgery, or their great-grandfather had it and he couldn't get out of bed anymore and this is my life and I'm doomed. I mean, those are the kind of stories that people start telling themselves when they start having like reasons for their pain. So you go from there and now you got these different channels in your nervous system that are allowing things in to get your nervous system more excited. And usually there's like a gatekeeper at the brain that sends away the signals that aren't a threat. But when it gets overstimulated like that, that guy just lets everything in. And so now even the smallest thing can become a pain trigger. And now your threshold of sensitivity raises so high that a minor movement can put you into the pain cycle, whereas normally you have a good buffer zone between no pain and pain. Once patients start to understand that, they're like, oh, this is totally different.
How do you help them understand that?
Carefully. This is a really difficult endeavor to teach people, because inevitably the first thing they think is you're saying the pain's all in my head. And it's exactly what you're saying, because you can only have certain amount of sensations, but it's what your brain does with that sensation and how it responds back to your body is how you perceive it. But you can't say that. So you ask questions, and you ask open-ended questions. You ask for answers. You just are patient with them. And then if you kind of feel it getting away, you just leave the subject and do a few things and touch on it again, maybe next visit. Usually if you plant a seed or two, people come back and ask and you can take it from there. There's some great literature. There's a little diagram that we use that shows the threshold and shows like what your threshold is and why you're so close to it. There's another great one where it shows all the body parts, and basically 80% of people over 30 have a herniated disc and don't have pain. Then you ask the person, why are you different? Or all the normal problems people have, degenerative knees, osteoarthritis, same idea. Most people have it and are just fine. Yours isn't. Let's explore why that is.
At what point are you crossing into psychology here?
Yeah, all of it.
All right. No, and I think that's important for all professionals to know in our field, right? An active field, whether it's PT or strength conditioning.
I'll say that it's psychology, but it's actually truly anatomy. Like your body is adapting and changes to these, and you can adjust based on like your comfort level with pain. If you start nudging into that pain that you think is going to be traumatic, and it's not traumatic, and you're able to provide little victories or like little episodes of a movement that you would perceive as dangerous, but you've made it, those little wins start to add up. And now people are like, oh yeah, maybe that isn't as bad as I thought it was. And so those people that are highly sensitive, my goal is to get them into positions that they cringe at first. Like you say, squat to somebody and they go into these protective postures with chest up, back arching, neck shrugged, right? And I'm like, you didn't even do anything yet. Did it hurt already? And they're like, no. I was like, all right, well, let's calm. Take a deep breath. Exhale. Let's do it now. Does it hurt? I'll hold your hand. Literally, it doesn't hurt at all. I let go. They're still there. Still doesn't hurt. Stand up. We do some more. And then I put some weight on. I'm like, oh, man, I'm squatting.
Are you celebrating
Oh yeah.
I feel like that's a huge part. I do it. Maybe I think sometimes almost too much. Like I'll see someone across the room and I'll celebrate like, that was awesome. Did you just see that? Yeah. You said you wouldn't be able to touch your toes ever. Yeah. I just saw you do it.
Yeah.
So celebrating is a big part of that. How is your team? How's the environment adapted to that?
They're good. That celebrating reminds me, there's a peak end theory. You know, are you familiar with this?
No, I'm not.
So peak end is what people remember. Patients remember like the peak, or anybody remembers in an experience the peak, right? Which is like the culminating moment. Yeah. So you try and create a peak on every visit. There's got to be one moment that something awesome happens or something that you can celebrate or they can bring to their attention. And then the end, the last thing that you do or say to them, they remember those two things. So there's your marketing. If you can create a peak end moment in every visit, you're golden.
Here's a little training secret that I'll let out to the world. That's one reason why I always do like awesome high fives at the end of every training session. I don't know if you've seen me do that.
I have. I've noticed that.
I always try to do like, hey, great workout today. And I always try to do a killer high five.
I'll look forward to that at the end of this.
I mean, we can do it.
I've seen a couple shoulders.
On mic.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
I do it because it leaves a good lasting impression. And that's same true. Thing like when I teach, I always try to have my first lecture always needs to be unbelievable. And my last class, that's not the final, always has to be something very memorable for that reason.
Yeah, it goes a long way. Talk about like a busy clinic.
Right.
All you got to do is hit them with two moments and they're like, oh, that guy was great.
You're right, though.
I didn't even talk to you. I had two great moments.
An environment, you're in a bigger clinic. You have several PTs. You have several PTs here. I mean, there's a good chance these patients are going to be working with different PTs. So I think it's just good general practice to be friendly with all the patients, right?
Oh, yeah.
So if I see a victory across the room, I'm going to call it, whether it's a patient of mine or not. So I think that just is a fun atmosphere to be in anyway. People are in pain, right? And obviously, you know, we're talking about pain science here. So quick touch on that then. How does that go beyond the clinic? How do they take that home? Or is it kind of like your experience with them hopefully carries over?
The point is that they start to learn about themselves and like what's driving it and what other factors they can control. And I think this goes back to different breathing strategies, understanding how to calm yourself down, understanding how to balance, understanding how to get yourself hyped up. How can breathing help you is a great way to take a hold of their own experience a little bit more. Pain science is kind of a broad term for just understanding. And honestly, like patients can learn a lot from it, but I think more importantly, the clinicians should learn from it because you start hearing pain science words come out of people's mouths the second they walk in. Like I'm trying to think of an example, but you know, I got my back pain again, right? Or like it's bound
back
to happen.
Yeah, my back went out on me over the weekend you know, I had one wrong move that grabbed the seatbelt. My shoulder hasn't been the same since.
Right.
You know, I'm like, what else did you try to do over the weekend?
Or like more is like, woe is me. It's like, there's a lot.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
There's a lot floating around there.
So then how do you address those attacks, right, on themselves or type thing or on their environment? You know, are you asking questions or?
Yeah. It depends on my relationship.
Yeah.
Like usually the very beginning I'm treading lightly and then I have sort of established a stick with patients where I can call people out pretty aggressively and like kind of play it off as a joke. And then they're like, oh, you know.
Yeah.
Got me again.
Hand over the forehead.
Yeah. You know. But the beauty is that my goal for all these people is they're not going to fix it. People have chronic back pain that are used to back extending and used to like opening up their infrasternal angle as like a form of survival.
Right.
They're not going to be able to turn that off. But what I want them to be able to do is notice more often and more quickly. And I get that feedback all the time. Like, oh, it still hurts, but I stopped right away. I was like, I can't believe how I breathe. Like you say, I breathe. And so just noticing it that's my takeaway. And that's what I hope that each of the patients take away from me. Like I'm stressed. I need to breathe. I got to relax. I got to breathe. I got to whatever.
I think, yeah. I mean, listen, the lasting impression that we can have on patients is our biggest attribute in my opinion. Right. Like, so beyond their experiences and education that they took beyond the clinic, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years from now is what's more valuable than the time we're spending with them in the clinic, even kind of a perfect segue into PRI. So let's dive into that. What is PRI and how are you using it in the clinic?
So PRI is Postural Restoration Institute. It's a treatment modality that is a little bit different. I think a lot of people think of the body as symmetrical and our goal is to create symmetry, at least a lot of clinicians do, but we're not, and it's purposeful. So I guess the big thing about PRI is understanding that the foundation is that your diaphragm on the right side is more robust and well connected than the diaphragm on the left. So as a result, a lot of us favor the right side. When you favor the right side, especially people who like skipped some motor developmental stages, they end up shortening the right trunk, which limits their options for other movement patterns. So you can relate a lot to gait. If you're walking, you're on your right leg, you internally rotate the right hip, you shorten the right trunk, you rotate your shoulders in a certain direction, right? And that's your stance phase. The left side's doing the exact opposite. Thing that most people do, or people that don't have a lot of pain, is once they get on their left leg, they do the exact opposite thing and they shift into the different pattern. But what you see more often than not is you stay in the right side of pattern even when you're on your left leg. So PRI's kind of initial move is to recorrect and to position people into that pattern on the left side, make people aware that they avoid their left side, and then start to overcorrect the pattern so that when they finish doing that, they can perform better with their like exercise. It's kind of like painting. If you paint a door, it's good to paint it white first before you paint it the color. The PRI, the pain science, all that kind of stuff is the primer, not the paint. So you still got to do the exercise. You still got to fix it, but you got to prep the system a little bit. And PRI is really good at doing that.
And how do you implement that in practice though, like meaning cues with your hands, right? Yeah. What positions do you start them in? And I know there's several courses that you can take, but kind of want your take on like, okay, like this is where you start. And then, you know, we progress to different positions from there, or cueing, not cueing, et cetera.
So PRI, if pain science is a difficult conversation to have with a patient, pain, PRI might be harder.
Yep.
It's weird. It's like abnormal motions. It's nothing biomechanical. So yeah, there's some PRI people that are drinking the Kool-Aid that like really do it by the letter of the law. I find that patients don't respond that well to that. So I sprinkle it in here and there, but I do like, there's a 90-90 repositioning, which is kind of like their bread and butter. And you lay down on your back, your legs are on a wall with your knees bent at 90 degrees, and you're trying to do this like walking position there. So you would exhale, you'd reach your right hand to the ceiling, which drives you into the left abdominal wall. You adduct the left hip as you kind of like pull that left knee down and you reach the right knee up. This is probably pretty difficult to picture. But you're
doing a great job.
You're essentially trying to overload the muscles on the left that you don't use on the left. And you're trying to use the muscles on the right that you don't use on the right. And you do it, you kind of anchor it in by breathing. And that like exhale becomes more and more intense, driving yourself deeper and deeper into the position. And in turn, it inhibits the muscles you're trying to inhibit. And when you get up off the table, you feel like you're standing on your left leg for the first time in 10 years. There's a lot of people that are like, I can't feel my left, or I feel like I'm so tight on my right and my right low back hurts all the time. That's because they're stuck on the right and they can't get left and so bring that to their attention.
We've had PTs in here do that. We use it all the time now. And Rob has like really like opened up eyes coming in here and teaching some of our staff about it. And I see Rob do it. So, and you've taken how many of the courses?
Yeah, I've taken eight classes, some of them multiple times. Mike's the same way. Like, I think it's just a great philosophy to like look at the body and allow you to understand, you know, how breathing can really impact what this person can do for this exercise, for this movement, or to aid in improving in range of motion or help them walk better. So I think that it just has a lot. It helps check a lot of boxes with what you're trying to do with that person. Me as a coach that like can't do a lot of like manual techniques, it's really great tool to have in my toolbox to allow me to help somebody improve range of motion when otherwise they might need another tool to help do that. So I think it's great. It is also very complex, and I think Mike did a great job of like explaining what it is and how it works. And you know, I would definitely recommend someone take a course.
All right, so here's a question for you. Then, given that information, and do you move to functional positions from there? Or do you stay, that's the bread and butter, you stay in that position? I've seen sideline, right? Are you doing it in standing? Are you doing it in different positions? Well, obviously supine, but prone, standing.
Right, the course progresses you through those things.
Cool.
And it gets you into squatting and inhibition moves. There's a really common one for strength training where it almost looks like a wall squat, except your pelvic tilted underneath and you're trying to inhibit back extensors.
Gotcha.
So, but the cooler, I mean, there's so much to this.
Yeah.
We
do a whole podcast.
Yeah. Where it really hit home for me, I got into like understanding teeth and the jaw and the airway through that. And
wow.
And how, I mean, this is a rabbit hole, but kids don't chew hard enough food anymore. So they don't develop the bones in their jaw, which means their palate starts to get too high, which blocks the airway in their nose, which means everybody's a mouth breather and everybody needs a CPAP. So PRI talks a lot about that, finding occlusion of the left side of the jaw and stabilizing the airway, and really like your feet, your pelvic floor, your diaphragm, and your molars are kind of like four really important parts of your body. And if you don't have stability in those things, the rest of you feels kind of lost. There's some wild videos, like guys with Alzheimer's trying to walk down the hallway and they put a popsicle stick between their left molars, and next thing you know, they're walking. Like they got some teeth pulled, and that screwed up the whole system. So, like I said, it's a rabbit hole.
Yeah,
but it's but PRI will open your eyes to a lot of different things, yeah. And probably selling it a little bit here. I love it for what I know from it, and I've like everything else. I take parts and apply it every day, and a lot of it I don't stick strictly to because you lose a lot of patients because it's too esoteric.
What patient do you see walking the door and you're saying, all right, I got to do it with them, or that's not how it works? You don't like,
yeah,
you know, I think there's some people you can see. Yep. How, you know, you're sitting there, it's you're a clear
pattern.
Right?
Yeah, you're looking for patterns. If it's a very clear pattern, my personal theory, I think scoliosis is PRI. PRI is scoliosis. So if somebody comes in with like a really dramatic scoliosis, that's kind of, to me, if it's not rigid, that's the modality that I'll start with. But aside from that, it's just kind of pepper it in here and there and move on to the stuff that they're going to do in real life.
I like PRI too, because it also helped with like your testing and your assessment process, right? And that helps you identify these patterns. And then when you identify these patterns, you can prescribe exercises to correct it. So who can use PRI?
Yeah.
Technically anybody.
It's everybody.
Sure.
Everybody. It's just a matter of like, how do you use more of it or less of it? And what the goal is for that person or that patient that you're trying to make a change in. I feel like too, like Mike can chime in on this, but PRI can sometimes take a bad rap in the fitness community because it's a lot of like breathing and balloons and soft training. And I think you have to learn to apply those principles to fitness. And when you do that, I found personally that it really makes great changes for athletes and patients.
Yeah. I love the balloon thing too. The balloon is like a necessity. I think more people need to blow up balloons.
I agree.
But I will say like when we talk about like external cues and like making things very palatable for patients and lay people, PRI is not that. And it's really difficult to teach it without internal cues.
Sure.
And I think that's the reason I don't love PRI. I love so much about it, but I don't love that you can't just like apply it to normalcy. It has to be really specialized and it has to be really complicated. And anytime something's too complicated, I don't know that it's worth it when you're trying to impart that information to somebody else who doesn't also know it.
I love that. All right. Last question for you pertaining to this. A student, new grad, PT, just took boards, passed boards. What course should they take first?
I think you need some sort of evaluative course and some sort of manual course to get you to cut your teeth.
Before you get to a
yeah, a I think pain science will, a new grad will latch onto pain science and like
oh God,
have one visit with everybody because nobody's coming back. but you need something. You need to be able to do something consistently. See, you got to see a lot of reps. And once you start to see reps, then you can get patterns. And you also need to make people feel better. A new grad that doesn't necessarily make great decisions all the time can touch people and make them feel better. So if you don't have that tool right away, my preference is I thought FMS was great. Like I said, I use a lot of SFMA, but you know, FMS is enough, I think. I just think I like the motor control thing, but that's a big one. And then any kind of manual therapy is great. I think those Great Lakes courses have a lot of manual therapies wrapped up into one course is a really nice way to do it.
What I like most about Great Lakes is their packets that you get. Like I feel like the detail in the handouts, right? Yeah. Or the prep work, very easy to like store, open up, review, like the visuals. That way you can always like, cause you know how it is. You're always going back into the arsenal to see like review different techniques or what have you. So Great Lakes, I've heard great things about all their courses. Maitland's another one that gets a lot of attention. So are there any protective factors or risk factors that would maybe influence someone's experience with pain that you would see in the clinic?
So there are no demographics, there's no ages, there's it's all about what's happening in your life and the like lifestyle choices and experiences that you're having at a given time. So I think I already mentioned sugar. Don't eat sugar after surgery. Your body is like too busy fighting the inflammation caused by the sugar to heal the body. It's just one of those examples. Like if, you know, somebody's having all this back pain or knee pain and they're like binge eat to kind of get over it and like make themselves feel a little bit better, they're just slowing down their recovery and they're like increasing the sensitivity of their system. And so the answer is no. I think everybody is equally subject to this. It just is a matter of, you know, an accumulative effect.
So would you ever say it's like trauma related, or whether it's an experience or I don't know, an event, could that lead to that? And then, would you expect that to come out at some point during your, your eval?
Surprisingly, it happens a lot.
Yeah.
I get a lot of information right away from people, but oftentimes it doesn't. And I think it doesn't matter if you're asking the questions that would let them start to explore that for themselves, then they can make the own assumption that that's impacting their pain.
I think that's a fair assumption, probably isn't the right word, but like they're going to figure it out. Like if you're asking the right questions and they're really taking a serious dive into it, they'll figure it out.
Yeah. They'll notice. They'll know. I mean, they know anyway that this thing is kind of like the elephant in the room. You just don't know it's the elephant in the room. So
right.
Once you tell them that the elephant is also helping cause pain, they'll be like, oh, I should probably do something about that.
I love it. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast. Stay tuned for the final three episodes with Doctor of Physical Therapy, Mike Wilson. In the next episode, Mike shares his clinical approach in treating, managing, and progressing hamstring tendinopathies in runners and other athletes.
Thanks for listening to the On Cue Performance Therapy Podcast. If you'd like this episode, please subscribe on Apple Podcasts and Spotify. It would mean so much to me if you could leave us a 5-star review so more listeners like you could get this important information. See you next time.